Whatever is your custom, please follow through with it now. I'd be happy to read the scripture for this evening. It comes out of Matthew 16. Matthew 16. Gospel according to Matthew. Chapter 16. And we'll begin reading in verse 13. And if I sound somewhat like a teacher, so be it. Jesus was a teacher, beginning in verse 13. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And they said, "Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremias, or one of the prophets." He saith unto them, "But whom say ye that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ. And from that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, "Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee." But he turned and said unto Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men." Then said Jesus unto his disciples, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profitable if he should gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his works. Verily I say unto you, there be some standing here which shall not taste of death, till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." It's interesting, as I get older and I can sometimes look back, and when Bill asked me to preach on this particular text, I went back to some of the older sermons that I had preached on this particular text, and I found that in 1972... No, it was not 1872. In 1972, I had preached on this text at a place called Rose Holman. And I'm not sure who the congregation was there, but I'm sure I'm going to be saying some of the same things. But it's a different sermon. It's not the same one. The country, in this 16th chapter, where Jesus is leading the disciples, not a friendly country. They were seeing on the stones and perhaps on the trees and other things around there signs of false gods. And it was a pretty rugged country. His life, 16, 28, there are 28 chapters in the Gospel according to Matthew, and this is the 16th. So, in a sense, you could say his life was 16, 28, finished. Well along, anyway, into his life ministry. And it's a verbal quiz that he's called for today. Whom do men say that I am? By the way, what are the polls saying? What are people saying about me? I've been around for a while now, 16, 28. What are people saying about me? Who do they say I am? And the answer came back. Some say that you're John the Baptizer. And some say that you're Isaiah's. And some say that you're one of the prophets. All right, now I have your attention. Have you heard a good teacher do something like this? Now I have your attention. Now comes the question I was really asking. Who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter always had his hand up first. Sometimes he was right, but he always had the first answer. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And the prof said, A on your oral recitation today. That's exactly right, Peter. I need to remind you something. You never could have figured this out yourself. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Only the Father could have told you that. But it's the right answer, and you have the right answer because the Father gave you the right answer. This is exactly the right answer. You have an oral, an A in your oral recitation today. If he kept his mouth shut from there on, he'd have had an A through the whole class that day. But Jesus went on to say at that point, upon this rock I will build my church. And for years and years and years, the church thought that he was talking about Peter himself. And upon this Peter, this rock. But it's the word Petra that he uses, not Petros. The world thought, and the church thought, that Jesus was saying, upon you, Peter, I will build my church. And what Jesus was saying, no, it's on this profession, a profession of faith like this. In every generation, here in Terre Haute and Indianapolis and all over the world, in every generation, I will find men and women who will make this kind of a profession. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And on this kind of a profession, that's what he's saying, on this kind of a profession, I will build my church. And the very gates of hell will not prevail against it. Now it sounds as though the gates got up and marched, but it's the old English word for prevail there that is being used. It means that the gates will not be able to hold out against the church that I built. The gates were the most solid part of all of it. I mean, the wall was solid, but the gates were really solid. And what Jesus is saying here, I will build my church. And even the gates are not going to be able to hold out against that. They will crumble. The gates will crumble before that. Upon this rock, the rock of this kind of a profession of faith, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. On that profession, the church will be built. And then Jesus went on to the next part of the lesson for that class that day. And he began saying to them, now I have to tell you something else. I'm going down to Jerusalem. And down in Jerusalem there's going to be something that will take place with me. They're going to crucify me. They're really going to take me down. Jesus Christ. They're going to crucify me. And Peter can't stand that. And his hand goes up again. And he says, oh no, Lord, we'll find a better way out than that. You're not going to have to die on the cross. We'll find a better way out. And Jesus turns and he uses some of the most severe language that he uses anyway. Get thee behind me, Satan. The very one that he commended just a few minutes before that, now he's calling him Satan. Why? Why is such severe criticism? Because this is the very kind of thing that Satan himself is using on Jesus. There must be an easier way, Jesus, than going to the cross. In just a little bit of time, at the Mount of Temptation, Jesus is going to be tested all over again. Just get down there on your knees and worship me, and I'll give you all these precious souls that you came all the way from heaven to save. Just get down there. You'll find an easier way than you're having to go to the cross. Jesus recognizes this as being Satan coming to him through one who must have been one of his favorite disciples. Peter was always impetuous, but Peter, he was just a dear man to Jesus. And Jesus recognized this temptation at that point. Is there some easier way that I could do get this job done without having to go to the cross? He didn't want to go to the cross. He's 30 years old. He didn't want to die. And are you willing to do what I've told you to do? What I want you to do? What I will plan for you to do? The way that I want you to do it? Are you willing to do my work, my way? Or are you going to try to find some easier way? You do not need to do, Peter, what I've done or what I'm going to do on the cross. You don't need to die for anyone else. That's all taken care of to tell us I. I'll take care of that. You can't die for somebody else in the way I will. You don't need to do that. But what I am going to ask you to do, you're going to have to do in the way I tell you to do it. What you do do in connection with the building of my church, you need to do in the way I tell you to do it. And so we're going to look at these four or five words here. I will build my church. We're going to look at them one at a time. I will build my church. Peter, it's obvious after today's performance that I can't depend on you. You fly high and then you fall low. And I think Jesus could see ahead to the time at the very end when Peter is going to deny him. I didn't even know him. I think he's going to see that. But I hope you remember that after Peter had denied Jesus, Jesus took him out alone. He didn't do it in front of all the others. He took him out alone on the beach there that day. And he said, Peter, after that kind of a performance, when you denied even knowing me, do you really love me more than these? Well, they finally caught a big catch of fish that day, which is what Peter had been after. And Jesus, I think, was asking him about that. But he may also have been saying, do you love me more than these other disciples love me? Do you love me more than these? And Peter said, well, you know that I love you. And you know that, but he didn't use the same word for love that Jesus used. Jesus used the word, the expensive word for love. Love me with an all-out kind of love. And Peter said, well, I can't say that I do. I love you with this other cheaper love that flows hot and cold. And Jesus came back to him the second time. He said, Peter, what I asked you was, do you agape me? You love me with a very expensive love. And Peter backed away from him the second time. And he said, well, I love you with this phileo kind of love that blows hot and cold. And then Jesus drops down to the word that Peter used. And he said, Peter, do you even phileo me? And Peter was grieved because Jesus asked him that. And he said, well, Lord, you know that I love you that way. But that tells you a little bit about the how Peter was one who could just blow hot and cold. He was with the ups and the downs. And even in that final exam, he denied Jesus. And Jesus, in effect, is saying here, Peter, I can't trust you to do my building for me when it's my church that's being built. Peter is so much like me. As I look back into my own life, I see how I blow hot and cold. And sometimes I'm just all hot. And it's a love. Whatever Jesus wants of me, that I want. And then another time, it's something else. And so Jesus says to Peter, I can't trust you to build my church for me. I can't trust you. But I'll use you. I cannot trust you to do my church building for me. Many of us throughout the presbytery and throughout the synod are really looking to God to use you people in the building of His church here in this community. And we're knowing it has to be Jesus that will do it. He'll use you, but He's not going to depend just on you any more than He did on Peter. Now the second word, I will build my church. He's the first person of the Godhead. Direct result of the work on the cross that He was building this church. I've created people to glorify myself. I've created families in order to illustrate the principles of married life. I just came from a wedding. We've seen that boy grow up from the day he was born. And we've seen that girl grow up from the day she was born. And now here they are, standing together and committing themselves to each other till death do us part. And he is wanting to give his life for her. Husbands, love your wives. How? Even as Christ loved his church and gave himself for her. Self-sacrificing love. I just prayed 61 years ago that God would let me take care of Margie. And He is. I get to push her in a wheelchair now. And He's still letting me take care of her. And he creates families to represent that. And she said, I give my life to you, Eric. I give my life to you. She submits her life to Him. He lays down His life for her. Jesus says, well, I built a family to be a demonstration of the gospel message. The way I love my bride, the church, and the way the church submits her heart to me. That's why He created the family and civil government that we were just praying for. He says, I created the individual, I created the family, I created civil government, and I create the church. And of all these, though, the church is the only one I describe as my bride. She's my bride. In a very special sense, I brought my church into existence. Only I could do that. And I'll use people in every new generation, people like Peter, people who make the same kind of a profession of faith, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. I use people in building my church. But I'm the one who does it. You don't build the church. You don't plant the church. You don't organize the church. Jesus says, I do that. I am the only one that can do that. God allowed Margie and me to be in Indianapolis before other Reformed Presbyterians were there in 1963. And then in 1972 or 3, we realized that he had organized and formed four other congregations, and people were beginning to call it Roy's Church. I hated that. I just said, don't say that. Jesus said, I will build my church. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. And always they nod their heads and say, yes, that's right. It's Jesus that did it, it's not you. But it became more and more that people were thinking that way, regardless of what they were saying. And so it came to the place where I went to the elders and I said, it's time for me to resign so that people will know that this is Jesus doing this building. Not me, it's Jesus. And they wisely said, Blackwood, don't resign, but just get out of here for a while. And then we'll know that it's Jesus and not you that's doing it. And so we did. In 1974, we started driving west. We started driving east on I-70. And a little over a year later, we came driving back into Indianapolis from the west on I-70. And it is round. We literally drove all the way around the world. And every place we went, we found Jesus. And in the meantime, the church there in Indianapolis prospered. Well, there were some hard things that came up. But they knew that it wasn't just Roy. They knew that it was Jesus who was doing the same thing that we're praying for you here in Terre Haute. That you will know that it is Jesus who is doing the building. I do that through you. No other person will build a church or plant a church or organize a church. Jesus says, I do that through you. And second, I will do it. Do you believe that? That's a promise that he's made to you. I will build my church. No doubt about it. I will do it. It may seem to us in any given civilization or generation that the church is dying. And there's lots of people who are sort of hoping for that, and they talk about that. It may seem as though in North Africa, in the days of a man named Augustine, they were sending missionaries out from North Africa all over the world. But now look at it. All over the world, people are sending missionaries to Africa. And it could seem to those people in Africa as though the church was dying out. I'm going to use bad grammar, children. Don't ever do this. Tain't so. I'm trying to emphasize a point. It is not so. The church is healthier today than she ever has been. I don't care what Barna says or anyone else. She's growing because Jesus said, I will build my church. I will do that. The post-Christian generation. I don't like that terminology. But we're hearing a lot about it today. Post-Christian. Post-Christian civilization, cosmocide, the late great planet Earth. There's a pessimism involved in that. That is flying in the teeth of what Jesus said when he said, I will build my church. The world civilizations will not destruct until that purpose has been accomplished. Question. As to whether or not the Christian church in a given place is going to be there. But as far as the Christian church throughout his world is concerned, one of the things we came back very sure of as a result of that mission around the world was that every place we went, every country, and I don't know how many different, we drove from Scotland to Singapore and then put the thing on a ship and came on back. And every place we went, we found Jesus doing his work. His church being built. I have a grandson who's just come back from the operation mobilization, and he's been on the new ship, the Logos Hope, in various parts of the world. And it's exciting to me. He's a junior this year up at Purdue University. Don't hold that against him. It's close to home for him. But he's a junior there. And every place he went, he found Jesus, I will build my church. And it's true today. Going to work on the word build now, the third word. I will build my church. Very interesting Greek word, archidomeo. I will develop. I will draw together. I will organize and design and empower. The two Greek words for church are ekklesia and congregationes. Well, you might imagine what congregationes means, a gathering together of his people. Ecclesia is a calling out of his people. Oikodomeo is involving both those words. I have entered their hearts. I have empowered their wills. I have saved their souls. I have enlightened their consciences. This is the word build, the precious word that he uses there. I have provided for their every need. I protected them from Satan. I've directed them at every point. I have planned ahead for them way beyond anything they could see. I have done that planning. I've designed a special kind of life for each member so that the body as a whole is more complete than any one could be. It's not that conformity creates the unity. It's that diversity actually creates the unity. And all of this and more is involved in my orchidomeizing, if I can make an American translation of a Greek word. My building, a body, a branch, a vine, a building. The fourth word, I'm going to skip one word here for just a minute. I will build my church, and then it will be a church, a group of ecclesia, people who've been called out. God, a couple of hundred years before the Christian community got started, sent the Greeks throughout the world, and the Greeks taught the people how to organize their own government. Before that, there was not much community organization, but they were called out, and they were taught how they could govern themselves. And then sometime after that, Jesus sent the church through that area, and people learned how it is that the church is called out and made to be able to do what he wants them to do. It will be my church, my ecclesia, my congregationes, people who profess to belong to me, professing to trust in me, people who have me in their hearts. If you build it, it may have the name for being a church. It may have the outward marks, some of them, of being a church. It may look and sound like a church, but it's a social club if you build it. If I build it, it'll be a church. That's the difference. That's the difference. When I do it, then it will be my church. You do it, and it would be yours. It might even someday have your name. Have you ever seen a church that has somebody's name on it? Yeah, there are a lot of them around the country. But Jesus said, I will build my church. Not Roy's church or Bill's church or John's church or anyone else's church. That may be a term of endearment. And how often have you heard somebody say, well, now, I'm going over to my church tonight. It's a term of endearment, and that's nice, but it's not a theologically sound term. Your church, his church, our church. How often in church meetings do we hear people saying, well, now over at our church, we do it this way. Or they do it that way over theirs. It's Christ's church. It's his bride. And if somebody had walked up to Elisa after that wedding there at the church yesterday evening and had said, my, don't we have a nice bride? I suspect that Eric would have turned around and started swinging. And if he hadn't, he should have. And yet that's the way we sort of lay our cotton-picking hands on Jesus' bride. She's very attractive. The government through the years has tried to lay their hands on Jesus' bride. It's never worked. Individuals have tried to lay their hands on Jesus' bride. Never worked. And so when God uses you, and He will, just as He used Peter, Peter became a key man. He wrote, God used him to write books of the Bible. He became a key man in Jesus' building of the church. And Peter, so I know that Jesus could use you in building a church. But when He does, be careful. Don't ever start calling it my church or our church or allow anybody else to say that. Donald Cargill was a man who died in Scotland years ago on his last public testimony when he was climbing the stairs and they were going to kill him. They were going to hang him there. He said this. It was a little simpler situation for him. The state was owning the church in that day. And he said, seeing the power of the ownership taken from Christ, which is His glory, and made the essential of His crown, I thought it was as if I had seen one wearing my own husband's clothing after he had killed him. And seeing they are so expressed, we must be plain, for otherwise it is to deny our testimony and consent to his robbery. Check it. And see how often. Well, what church are you going? Well, I'm going over to our church tonight. Or I'm going over to his church, or her church, or their church. Or someone, check that. Another way that this slips into our conversation is we have, at the church over here, we have so many people, or we have such an offering, or we have. That's Jesus. We don't have those things. Those are Jesus. There was a person who was a deacon in one of the churches that I was involved in, and we had a peculiar situation whereby on the balcony there were lights up there, and there was a class up there of university students. They weren't members of the congregation. They were just university students. They were looking hard at the church, but they were going through in 4 years, and so probably they weren't going to become members of the congregation. I said to the man that I turned that class over to, because I was working with the couples down here, I said to that man, how's the church going? Two or three weeks after he began teaching. He says, oh, it's going okay, except you keep turning the lights out on us. I thought he was making some spiritual statement. I said, what do you mean they're turning the lights out? He said, well, we just get started in the class and they turn the lights out. I said, turn them back on. He says, you forget, Roy, there isn't a light switch up there in the balcony. You have to go clear down to the control panel. Well, then he began to soak through what his problem was. And the control panel happened to be right outside my study where I was meeting with a group of couples. And so the next week, I left the door open. And what would happen, except not long after the class began, this deacon came along and switched the switch on the light panel. And I knew what must have been it. But I was trying to be gracious. And so I said to him, to the deacon, afterwards, I said, I saw you had to do something to the control panel out there, like during the class. Classes were going on all over the building. He said, yeah. He said, I was turning out the lights in the balcony. And I said, well, there's a class up there. Oh, I know that. But those university students, they don't pay their way. And they're not going to become members of the congregation. Well, somehow or other, somebody in making sure that he would be a good deacon, that person would be a good deacon, had impressed upon that person that they needed to be just as careful with the Lord's resources as they were with their own. The problem was that that person began thinking of the Lord's resources as being their own. And we did get it straightened out over a period of time. But I would pray that this congregation here, you're bound to have a lot of university students. And God bless them. And would you please ask Jesus to help you equip them to see what they're going on to churches all over His world. Students from other countries. Would you please pray that God would use you? I used to pray that out back of the big house that we bought there in Indianapolis, there was a driveway that came in off Route 421 and went out up here onto the other street. You could drive right through the grounds and out on the other side. And it was a big garage. There used to be a big garage there. They've torn it down now because they needed parking places and everything. But there was a big garage there. And I said to the congregation, no, we don't want to be the kind of church where people come and just park their souls. The kind of garage where they park their souls. We want to be the kind of a church where people will drive on through us and out on the other side. They'll be here with us for a while, and they'll learn what it means to be His witness, and they'll grow up into spiritual maturity. We'll see some of them come to know Christ, and others will go on to grow, but they won't stay here. They'll grow on all over His world. And that will be our ministry. And the elders got to me one day because I was excited about it. I just discovered something new. And I get very excited sometimes when I do. And the elders said, Roy, would you please be careful? Because it sounds as though you don't want people staying with us. Well, I did want them staying with us. But I didn't want us just to keep us to ourselves as our church, as ours. But to send them out all over His world. That has been a ministry. And God could use you in doing that same thing. I will build my church, Jesus said. I will build my church. Don't speak of it as I have a church. I have this, I have that. We have a pastor now. No, God sent someone to us. Jesus has sent someone to us. And He's ministering to us. And we pray that God will use Him. And that'll be one. And God will send you elders. Just as He sent Peter to be an elder in the church, a pillar in the church. He will do that. But make sure that you keep thinking of it as being His church. Because Jesus said, I will build my church. God, command your blessing upon this group of men and ladies and children. God bless them as you build your church, as you use them to build your church. And God, keep them remembering that it will be always more yours than it is theirs. And God, I pray you keep giving him that vision that you would see people coming in and becoming Christians and growing into spiritual maturity and then going back out into your world to go all